Welcome to the Radiant Springs Church Podcast. Check out our website at radiantsprings.com for more information about us. If you are challenged with what you hear on this podcast, come join us on Sunday mornings at 10 o'clock for our contemporary worship, message, fellowship, and coffee. Radiant Springs. Refreshing. Relevant. Real.
Good to have Josh speaking today, and he doesn't need much of an introduction. So, but I appreciate Josh and Karen. These guys, they've been so faithful and such a blessing to our church, and more than they get compensated or any of that. They just so faithful, and so. And I know God, last time he spoke, God just gave him a real great message, and so asked him to speak here. And so I'm going to turn it over to you, Josh. God bless you. All
right. Hello, everyone. Cam adjusting. I like this kind of shorter. All right, so I was told all the kids are supposed to go sit by Pastor Brent this morning. It wasn't for me. He said it, so I'm just kidding. Actually, he did say, "Chase, go." Now he's moving. Am I going to be louder? Okay, all right. Okay, so most of the teens in here probably heard this already. I spoke a few weeks ago, 2-3 weeks ago, over this, and once you guys see the picture, you probably will know. I'm trying to use Karen's iPad, and it's having trouble. Well, not with this. Usually, Chris is taking over this. Usually I, there we go, okay. I could control it off of the iPad, but it would have to be from my computer. But I had Karen's iPad in there trying to get everything ready, and then I dropped her iPad on my computer. Her iPad's fine. Mine has a little scratch on it. So hopefully her iPad is fine. I think it is. I dropped it screen down onto the computer. So the teens have probably already heard this. I kind of changed it up a bit and added some things and changed some stuff out. So there's going to be some new things in there. But first off, I have a question. Any of you guys have read on the internet or articles about 12 things or whatever type of number so-and-so won't tell you? So, for instance, like 10 things your teacher won't tell you, or 10 things a flight attendant won't tell you, or 9 things a waiter or waitress wish you knew, or maybe the parents out there like this one, 13 things your parents wish the kids knew. And one that I kind of joke around about, 15 things your coroner won't tell you. So I've seen even some with 10 things youth pastor or pastor won't tell you and stuff. But basically what these articles are for, and there's a lot of them out there, they give perspective on that position that the person is in. So usually the person that's writing it, if it's a flight attendant, then usually it's probably comes from a perspective of the flight attendant that's writing it. And it's usually... It's usually in regards to what they wish people knew about ins and out of being a flight attendant. And usually most of it's over frustrations of a flight attendant and stuff like that. So few definitions. A perspective is a particular attitude toward or way of regarding something. So it's a point of view. And I'll probably... say another word I'll use it kind of interchangeably. You guys have heard of perception, right? Perspective and perception. Those are kind of, I guess, two similar words. Perception is the ability to become aware of something through our senses. So we have a perspective, a point of view on something, and perception is we're able to sense things through our senses, become aware of something. Statement I have down, and I'm going to be kind of going off from that, is how we think affects how we behave. And you guys agree with that statement? How we think affects how we behave. So if one of your kids is not listening to you and being disrespectful, they probably, in their mind, are thinking probably not what they should be thinking. Whenever we feel like our perspective is always right, when we feel like we're never wrong, when we don't really care about what anyone else says, it can become dangerous. When we have this one kind of one mindset where we have kind of like those, I don't know what those are called, the horses that wear the blinders. Are they called blinders? I don't know, I'm not a horse person. So it's kind of like that when our perspective is only on one thing and we really don't care about anything else. It can become dangerous and not really healthy all the time. So I'll just make this statement right now. No one is ever right all the time. And I told the teens this when I said that, and I kind of reiterated that, told them, you guys are never right all the time. Sometimes we don't know the answer to things. Even the smartest people in the world are constantly learning new things. What makes a good... I'm a teacher, and there's a lot of teachers part of this church and in our community, and what makes a great teacher is they are constantly learning new things, are constantly engaging with the content of their class, the materials, and constantly engaging their brain. So recently, I'm doing a long-term sub position in Lincoln at a middle school, and I'm teaching, most of you guys know my degrees in social studies, but I am teaching math for about a month and a half. And math is easy for me, but I prefer to teach other subjects, so I'm getting kind of stretched in that area. It's easy for me to do math. I just kind of have to make it so that the students get it. So, anyway, so there is a tendency. So I brought that up because I'm teaching math, so I'm stretching. I said that we engage our brain and stretching our brains. Math is one of those subjects that when you, there's all these new apps out there that, any heard of Lumosity? Lumosity? Dolingo, is that right? Dolingo. There's a bunch of other apps that work our brain. Especially when we get older, there's a lot of, we remember, there's a lot of information already in there, already in our brains. So if we're 100 years old, there's a lot of information in our brain. So those that are young, I told the high schoolers this. I was trying to, I had a question when we had small groups about try to remember a letter that somebody wrote you that was really meaningful. And Daniel was there, and I told him this. It was hard for me to kind of think back in my mind of a meaningful letter that somebody wrote because there's been a lot, and I'm trying to remember the most meaningful. And I'm like, well, for the high schoolers, it's probably a lot easier because they've lived for, I don't know, 15, 16, 17 years. Well, apparently, is it today Nigel's birthday? 16th birthday? So he's lived for 16 years today. So when I talk about nobody is ever right all the time, there's a tendency when we become teenagers, well, most of us aren't becoming teenagers, we've passed that, but we tend to get into this I know everything stage, and maybe parents kind of know that or understand that, or when you were teenagers, you were in that stage. And maybe we know some people that are still in that stage. Ecclesiastes 1:18, and thank you to Chris, he put all the verses up here that I have. I did not have them down. So he got those. Ecclesiastes 1:18, with much wisdom comes much frustration. The more knowledge, the more grief. And this version, oh, I guess I had a different version. For much wisdom is much vexation. I think I changed the word because vexation is, I don't use that word. So I looked it up, and it's kind of frustration, so I put frustration. And he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. And what... And I quote this verse a lot because it's kind of straightforward. With more wisdom comes more frustration. So when you know more things, you know more the complexities of life, there's going to be more heartbreak and sorrow and things like that. The more that you know about somebody, the more that you're more inclined to be let down in certain examples and situations. I'm reading a book right now that's it's called what is it called? It's something making something stick. It's basically this might sound bad, but the book is about helping people remember certain ideas and things like that. And it's called Made to Stick. And so it's a secular book, but it was recommended by a pastor, and the book is used for business leaders, advertisers, marketing specialists, but it's also used for other businesses, but teachers, pastors, anybody that wants to make an idea or like a message or something stick. And I'm only on the first chapter, but they mention curse of knowledge. The first chapter is about making some complex things, making them simple but yet profound. So they refer to Proverbs a lot because when we look in the book of Proverbs, Proverbs are simple statements, very short statements that are pretty profound. Even this verse in Ecclesiastes, it's kind of pretty simple but yet it's profound. And even Solomon wrote this, and he wrote the book of Proverbs. So it talks about the curse of knowledge. So when you're teaching, when you're trying to explain to the students, you try to make it so they get it, so it's on their level. And a lot of times when you get up into college and things like that, there's a lot of really, really, really smart people up there. And sometimes the really, really, really smart individuals, when they teach a class, sometimes it's over your heads. Though sometimes I've had professors that are extremely smart, and they break it down for me. They break it down for the students, and it's really good. But sometimes when you talk to people, they use all these words that I didn't even know were English in the English language. So it talks about the curse of knowledge. And when I was kind of putting together this message, I was like, there's a lot of big words I'm using, and I'm totally doing the opposite of what the first chapter of this book talks about. But hopefully I try to break it down, and I spoke on this. This is from 2 weeks ago in youth group, so hopefully it wasn't as over their heads. Okay, so like I said, I'm history, social studies teacher, and I'm reluctantly teaching math right now. But I do love studying and reading about history, geography, government, psychology, social studies, all the stuff that's involved with that. And with that, I kind of constantly want to update myself. I'm constantly going through reading articles, watching the news, updating myself, reading different magazines, kind of keeping myself up to date on what's going on in the world, especially as a social studies teacher. A lot of times, most of you guys have probably do current events every week, correct? Or at least you talk about it. Well, most of the time, I tend to do current events is because it's pretty important to stay up with what's going on. Sometimes I ask students different things of what's going on in the world, usually big things, and sometimes they have no clue what it's talking about. They do have, okay, what's kind of the two big things that's kind of in the news a lot this past week? Ebola virus, and ISIS, yep. And so those are the two things that the kids at school that I'm at are talking about. And so they kind of, but it's, most of the time they just heard the word and little things that other people say, And sometimes it's totally out of context, or not even what's actually happening. There's a funny story about that with a student. Well, I'm not going to share it, but it's kind of. I told Karen this about the girl that's telling all the everybody about these things. Oh, anyway, so again, I constantly want to. I read the news and everything, and with that, it kind of frustrates me because I read the news, and usually most of the time the news is not really good all the time. The media, they tend to want the stories that are shocking or have that shock value, and most of the time it's usually about death or disease or war or anything in between like that. And sometimes, I told the kids this, sometimes they have a cute puppy to kind of balance out the negativity. They'll have a picture of a cute puppy or a story about it. So there's a couple words. There's a few words that I'm going to kind of go over in a second that kind of have crept up into society and even the church to some extent. And the worldviews and perceptions that people have on life. And maybe you've heard of some of these words before, and I'm going to kind of break them down, hopefully to the best ability that I can. And some of these kind of go together, and some of them are separate. But some of these words are relativism, humanism, moralism, materialism, cynicism, apathy. So some of us have probably heard a lot of these words before. And a lot of these worldviews kind of started in... we think of like ancient Greece and with the philosophers, and even they came up through the Enlightenment period and the Renaissance with a lot of new learning and ideas and more philosophy and all stuff that it's really boring to talk about. And the way I see it, and from being in college and stuff, a lot of these ideas, they start like in with the really smart people. So usually a lot of the smart people are like the professors and leaders and stuff and universities and everything, and all these ideas kind of trickle down into the rest of society. So the first one that I have is relativism, and it's basically the knowledge, truth, and morality exist in relation to culture. Society or historical culture. There's no absolute truth. What's relative might be what's truth to me might be different for Karen, or might be different for Daniel. And so it's going to be, and this is probably the biggest one that I'm talking about, how has kind of affected our culture. And when you read the news, or what I like to do is I go on social media or even different news websites, and sometimes if the article is really boring, I'll just go down all the way to the comments and see what everybody says. And it's always funny because usually, most of the time, everybody's arguing with each other about who's right and who's wrong or this, and most of the time it's not even about the article to begin with. And relativism is basically meaning truth is relative to each person. So when I had the kids up here, or when we had the youth group in the back, I had one of the students come up with her purse. So she had her purse up here, and I took it from her. I stole it from her. And I asked her, is that wrong? And she said, well, yeah, it's wrong. But I told her, well, stealing's not wrong for me, so it's okay. And that's kind of gave an example of what this means is, even though most of us probably agree that stealing is wrong, but in kind of a relativistic society, and when somebody believes that something isn't wrong, and of course we all think it's wrong, it can become confusing. I know for me, we know we believe that there is a right and a wrong, We believe in morals and godly morals. And if we didn't have any rights or wrongs in the world, that would be really confusing, right? If we didn't have laws or rules or morals, it can become really, really confusing. And it honestly gives me a headache when I think about this term, or when I read articles about what's right for one person is not right for the other, especially on issues regarding stealing. I went to a Christian college for 2 years, and I finished up online. When I was there, I had people steal from my room, and it frustrated me. And most of it was textbooks. They stole the textbooks out of my room. And I did have my iPod stolen, and my roommate had his Xbox stolen out of a different room, out of the community kind of living room. But it kind of frustrated me that, because somebody stole something from me. And it's hard to tell somebody why stealing is wrong. Like, how would you say, okay, you probably say, okay, this bottle of water is mine, so you cannot take it. And I was trying to think of how would I explain to somebody, especially, I don't know, maybe somebody as young as 2 or 3, how do you kind of know what's to explain to somebody what it is? But usually when you're young, you kind of already have that in you. Like, God's kind of already placed that those morals inside of us, because we know stealing is wrong. The next one that I have is humanism, and this is kind of not necessarily a noob term, but it's kind of I remember a professor in college, most of his lectures were kind of about this. It was a school philosophy of education, Christian school, it had a really long name, but it was like Christian school philosophy of education. Humanism places the importance of humans above anything else. So anything divine, anything else supernatural. Humanism basically places humans above God. And there can be many different meanings with this, but there is also a modern secular humanist world organization. There's actual organization with this, and nearly all the humanists would be, they would consider themselves atheists, and there's actually also atheist churches in America and in Europe. They kind of sing songs and have, like, I don't know, you would call it worship for them or whatever. I don't know what they would worship themselves. I don't know. it looked like they would take, like, old abandoned churches and have, like, I don't know, humanist services or something like that. But it's a belief and worldview that many humanists forcefully push onto society, especially in the education world, from universities all the way to grade school. I know there was, where is it? I believe it's in Texas or something. They're fighting over, it's a school in where students are protesting. I don't know if it's in Colorado or Texas, but they walked out of the school because the school board is trying to change the way history is being taught in the schools. And maybe somebody wants to shout out where that is, or nobody knows. Is it Texas? Okay, it's... Well, I know when I was in college, there was a big thing in Texas where they were trying to change how history is being taught, and they're basically taking out the bad stuff because... like the negative stuff, because they didn't want to for that to give kids ideas on things like that. Mostly it was like sit-ins or what's that term? Martin Luther King would do it all the time. Pacifism, but anyway, it'll probably come to me. Another one, it kind of goes with the first two, is moralism. Moralism is just basically kind of the worldview to live life just trying to do what's right. Having good morals is all I need. I just need to live by proper behavior, and then I'm set. Nothing else matters but that I'm happy and I live a good moral life. So that one's personally pretty much straightforward what moralism is. The next one is materialism and consumerism, and I kind of put these two together because they're pretty close together. materialism is a tendency to consider material possessions, so we have materials, material possessions, and physical comfort as more important than spiritual values. Consumerism is the preoccupation of society to desire to acquire things, goods, and materials. And we as consumers, all of us are consumers because we buy things, we purchase stuff, we do things like that. And things and materials isn't bad. Every time I think of materialism, consumerism, I always think of the story with the rich young man and Jesus, when he goes up to him and says, and the rich young ruler asked Jesus, "What can I do in eternal life? I've done all these things. I've kept the Ten Commandments, done all these things." And then Jesus comes and tells him, he says, "Give everything that you have and give to the poor, and then come follow me." And I know Dwayne was talking about how a lot of times, many times Jesus talked about money, because sometimes we can get caught up in material possessions and the resources that we have, because sometimes we might feel like that it makes us happy. I remember being younger, and when you're younger, you love Christmas or getting presents or your birthday is because you get the things that you want. And then when you get them, you're happy, you're really happy. And then, especially if it's like a video game for me when I was younger, I would be pumped for about a week, and then I'd forget about the game. it got boring for me. 1 Timothy 6:17 through 19, and Chris has it up on the screen. And it says, "As for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life." And so that kind of sets up where materialism and consumerism kind of has, I guess I would say, infected our culture in a way, especially living in a what's the opposite of socialism? Capitalism. Yeah, that's right. Living in a capitalistic society. See, I'm getting all confused too. Okay, cynicism. How many of you guys have heard the term cynicism before? Being a cynic, it's kind of an old Greek term. Basically, it's an inclination to believe that people are motivated purely by self-interest. So we're kind of skeptics or pessimists. Pessimism, skepticism, basically thinking that sometimes everybody is out to get you, or everybody's purely motivated by they have ulterior motives. In a survey done on our generation is much less trusting of institutions like government, businesses, religious institutions, organizations, and universities and schools. There's a sharp decline from the millennial generation to Generation X, so the generation of now. There's a sharp decline of that we're much less trusting. And part of it could be just our culture, and part of it can be what we hear on the news. When we think of Congress, their approval rating is like single digits probably right now, especially last year when we had the government shutdown. That was, I think, at an all-time low, single digits. And even polls rating different organizations. And it's kind of sad that people would think that, I mean, to me, that churches would have ulterior motives than what we're actually doing. And, of course, you might hear in the news once in, I don't know, very so often, very small percentage of things happen where we have church conflicts or somebody that does something really bad or steals stuff from a church or a pastor does something, and people take that and apply it to the whole church, and that can be dangerous. That's with that single perspective mentality, when we place one thing and we generalize it and put it on everything else. The last word that I have is apathy, and maybe most of us have heard this word before. Somebody is apathetic, or not pathetic, apathetic. Apathy is basically not caring about anything. There's a lack of interest, enthusiasm, or concern, and maybe some of the parents out there, they might think their kids are apathetic sometimes. When you go tell them to do something, and they just sit there and look straight at you. I still do that sometimes. But that's not what apathy is. Apathy is you kind of have a lack of interest in wanting to do stuff. You kind of care more about yourself, but it's just a lack of wanting to do anything. Now, I read this the other day in a study done. We are not inherently apathetic. It's either taught or caught. People actually do care about things, but there have been barriers and obstacles within our cultural system that have been put into the way of becoming more caring, engaging, and taking positive risk. And I think that's true to a certain extent, where if you look around and go to the schools, I know these kids care about stuff, but there's just, they want to fit in, and so that mentality of fitting in, a lot of these kids aren't caring about others in the way that they should be. And it's not that they probably don't care, it's just that they've been kind of taught and been modeled that behavior. And this is kind of what's affecting our culture now. What is engaging our interests? What's engaging these students' interests? What concept systems and stuff are taking our focus of the more important things? And I think that that's true with many people might say our culture is becoming more apathetic, and I think it's because other stuff is taking away our interests of what the most important thing should be. And as I'm reading this book, Made to Stick, we think of all the big companies out there, the advertisers, the marketing campaigns, all these things that are taking, they're really good at this. And this is why this book tends to study those, the great marketing campaigns. And we could all think of these great big slogans that these huge companies come up with that are so small, compact, and profound, but yet they had a lasting impact on society. You think of slogans like Just Do It, or what's the McDonald's one? I'm loving it, always loving it. And you can think of some others. And we think of how that has taken our focus away from things. And it's more than just these big companies with slogans, but it's it can be movies, social media, the internet. That takes away. There's tons of studies that show that the more you spend time on social networking sites and the internet, that takes away, you have lack of focus on other things as well. And I'm guilty of this as well. I'm always on social media or the internet. This is a quote that I read. This is America, and in America we have the right to, and he's being sarcastic on this. This is America, and in America we have the right to simultaneously be what we aren't and what we are whenever we want, to whatever degree we want, and everyone else must dance to whatever rhythm we happen to be playing at any given moment. You guys catch that? You want me to read it again? It's kind of a tongue twister. He's kind of being sarcastic in how our society is, a lot of people in our society are living their mentality. He says, this is America, and in America we have the right to simultaneously be what we aren't and what we are whenever we want, make people to whatever degree we want, and everyone else must dance to whatever rhythm we happen to be playing at any given moment. And when I read that, I think it's confusing. It's basically, I'm going to read this verse, and it kind of sums it all up. And this is Paul talking to Timothy. It's 1 Timothy 6:2-10. And this is Paul telling Timothy this, and it's kind of these next two verses I'm sharing, it's kind of Paul being, I believe, kind of prophetic and saying what the future is going to be like. And he says, teach and urge these things. If anyone teaches a different doctrine, it does not agree with the sound words of our Lord Jesus Christ and the teaching that accords with godliness. He is puffed up with conceit and understands nothing. He has an unhealthy craving for controversy and for quarrels about words, which produce envy, dissension, slander, evil suspicions, and constant friction among people who are depraved in mind and depraved of the truth, imagining that godliness is a means of gain. But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these things we will be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evils. It is, though, this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. And 2 Timothy 3, 1 through 9, Paul tells Timothy this, but understand this, that in the last days there will come times of difficulty. And Jesus says the same thing. For people will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not loving good, treacherous, reckless. This is kind of a bad list, isn't it? Treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having the appearance of godliness but denying its power. Avoid such people, for among them are those who creep into households and capture weak women, burdened with sins and led astray by various passions, always learning and never able to arrive at a knowledge of the truth. Just as Jannes and Jambres opposed Moses, so these men also oppose the truth, men corrupted in mind and disqualified regarding the faith. But they will not get very far, for their folly will be plain to all, as was that of those two men. So a question is that people have pondered and I thought of. The question is, what is reality? Is it something we believe? Is it something real whether we believe it or not? Or do we personally have to believe it in it in order for it to be true? And when I think of God, God's real whether we believe it or not. If I don't believe in God, that's not going to make him disappear. And I always think of, how many of you know the story of Peter Pan with the fairies? And the fairies is, if you don't believe in fairies, one of the fairies will go off and die. And how do you save them? You start clapping. If you watch the movie Hook, there's a part in the beginning of the movie where Julia Roberts, she's Tinkerbell, and she falls off and dies, and she's like telling Peter to clap and clap, and then finally he claps, and she's brought back to life. Now God's not like that. He's not like Tinkerbell, where if we don't believe in him, he's just going to magically disappear. Or whatever. So, does it take a certain amount of people to believe in something in order for something to become reality? So, truth is truth, no matter what. Something is going to be real despite my perception otherwise. Now, when I base all reality on only my perceptions, it can become dangerous because I'm human. I can only process so much information. I can only learn so much. I can only perceive certain things that are around me in my culture. So I am not going to be right all the time. But on the other hand, my perceptions together create what I know. And it's sort of like a quandary or a dilemma. Studies show for every negative interaction, we need at least three positive interactions to counteract that. I've heard this study a couple times. and it's kind of true to a certain extent, when we have a lot of negativity in our lives, usually negativity affects us if we're around it all the time. When we say negative things, or people around us say negative things and act negatively, is it going to produce positive results? Probably not. In math, it does. If two negatives equal positive. I've been teaching the kids this. That's one thing that they struggle with. Two negatives adding together, they always put a negative. So if you are in math class, two negatives equal positive. Okay, so these studies show that, and especially in schools, the principals and the people that come in and share with us this, if you have a student that is probably not behaving the best, you have a difficult student, you try to be positive with them, because if these kids constantly hear negative, they get negative attention, they're always told, don't do this, don't do that, you need to sit down, always told what they're doing bad, they're going to start believing in it. But if you start saying positive things, even though some students, it's really hard to think some positive things that they're doing or about them, but little things here and there, and the schools are slowly trying to help with this behavioral situations. And a lot of times I'll see or I'll hear teachers, they'll say something nice that they're wearing, or just something here and there, positive things that set a good example, or if they're sitting down and doing what they're supposed to do, you need to tell them that. And it's hard for me to do that sometimes. So if our perspective is always on the negative, do you think it would change to positive? I tell this to the students all the time, and in the classrooms, is we choose our own attitudes. And that's so true. We're in situations sometimes, and sometimes we can't control situations around us, but we can control our own attitudes. I talked with a student on Friday about this very thing, because she was not having it. I had to remove her from the classroom, and basically was somebody said something and she reacted to it in not a very good and positive way. So she had to be removed from the classroom, and so this is what I was telling her. You know, stuff happens, but we choose how we're going to respond and how we're going to react. Whatever we are allowing into our eyes, our thoughts, our minds, our spirits, our bodies, whatever we're allowing to influence us, it will affect our perception. It goes into the first statement I said, what we think affects how we behave. And I have one last story. Any of you have heard of TED Talks, company TED Talks? Well, this is from one of the, and what the reason I like these is because they have really smart people on there, and sometimes they'll have religious leaders up there. I watched one with Billy Graham on there, and things like, and what's the pastor? He wrote, he's Saddleback Church. Rick Warren, he was on there once, and a few other religious leaders, but mostly it's secular by nature. But they're kind of like short and sweet. They're kind of lectures, but they limit them for 20 minutes, and that's about how long I can stand with 20-minute lecture. And some of them are like 6 minutes too. Anyway, so there's a story. It's called The Danger of a Single Story. It's by a lady named Chimamanda Adichie, and she's from Africa, and it's kind of really fun to say her name. And the worship team can come back on, because that's what I told them. That's the cue for them to come up here when they hear the word Chimamanda. So Chimamanda, she grew up in Nigeria and to a middle-class professional family. Her father was a professor at a school, and her mother was an administrator at another school. they had housekeepers and people around them to help them out in the house. So they were well off in Nigeria. And one in particular housekeeper was a young boy. His name was Fide. All her mother told her was that he was poor and his family didn't have, they didn't have a lot of things. Everything that she knew, and Chimamanda was pretty young at this time. She was about elementary age. Everything that she knew about this boy was just about what her mom told her. That he was poor, his family didn't have anything, they really didn't have anything to offer. But when she visited his family one day, she saw these beautiful patterned baskets that one of his brothers had made. And the thought had not occurred to her that anybody in his family could make anything like that. Her perspective on his family was not a very good one. All she had heard about them was that they were poor, so it had become impossible to think anything otherwise. Poverty was her single story of them. So we fast track to when she gets sent to the U.S. to go to a university for college. Her American roommate was shocked by Chimamanda because her roommate had not experienced somebody from another culture. Her roommate was confused how she could speak English so well. English is one of Nigeria's official languages, among a few other ones. So her roommate was shocked that she can speak English so well, because she had this mindset of what Africa was. Her roommate asked if she can listen to some of her tribal music. And this is what she said. So Chimamanda pulled out a tape of Mariah Carey so she can listen to it. And her roommate thought she couldn't use certain appliances. So she thought, since she was from Africa, she couldn't use a toaster or microwave or whatever. Her roommate felt sorry for her even before she really knew her. Her roommate had a single story of Africa. And so this goes into the word that we probably are familiar with, stereotypes. And when we have a stereotype of something or somebody, we tend to put those people that are like them, we tend to think of them in that way. We shouldn't get caught up in a single story mentality. It produces stereotypes and it is incomplete. And the main point that I know I totally disregarded the first chapter of my book that I'm reading, but in my defense, I wrote this before I read it. So a lot of this is really confusing and complex, but the main point I want to get is God wants to be a part of our story in theirs. He wants us to have his perception. I want God's perception. I want to see life, reality, people, circumstances, everything through God's eyes. I don't want to get caught up in the negativity and meaningless things of this world. I don't want to be, I don't know if depressed is the word to say it, but depressed about everything that I read or watch on the news, because most of the time it's about drugs, murder, war, something crazy or shocking that's happening, and usually it's not really good, because our culture, that stuff sells, that stuff makes money. I want to get all that junk out of the way so that I can see God, I can see others through his eyes, and I can grow deeper with him and know him better. And I don't want to get caught up in all these worldviews or different ways how we view life. So we're going to pray, and the worship team is going to play a song they have picked out. So if everyone wants to bow their head and close their eyes, we'll pray. God, we thank you for today, Father. We thank you that we do live in a country, God, of freedoms and in a society that's structured in a way where we can worship you freely, where we can be who you called us to be. God, I pray that we would see others the way you see them. We all have stories and testimonies of what you've done in our lives, God. And for some of us, you have brought us through some hard things. Before we came to know you, God, before we were saved, some of us were in hard circumstances, God. And I pray that we would look at others and see them through your eyes, because some of the people that we're around are probably in those same circumstances. God, when we realize and understand and have that desire to see people the way you see them, you begin to change hearts. You begin to change things. And with that in mind, we can share others what you've done in our lives. We can share with others about Jesus, about truth, about life. God, I just pray for this morning that we would, most importantly, have your perception in life based on the Word of God, based on your truth, based on what Jesus has done for us. And as we sing the song, we would keep that in mind as well. And everyone, if you want to stand up and worship with us, and also there'll be people up here to agree with you in prayer as well.